on today's podcast, Take 30. Selected tracks by The Attack and Seven Lonely Street by Andromeda.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
So the first band we're going to talk about today is The Attack, who were sort of a freak beat psychedelic band formed in 1966 around the singer Richard Sherman. Also featuring Jerry Henderson on bass, who came from the Soul System. Sherman was also joined by Bob Hodges on organ, David John on guitar. David John also performs as Dave O'List when he was in the Nice, he did at least, and we'll talk about him a bit more as the programme goes on. And Alan Whitehead on drums, who was in Marmalade, not necessarily the conserve, but possibly so as well. But the band, the Obladi Oblada killing band Marmalade. They were on Decca in the late 60s and released four singles between 1967 and 1968. Those are the eight of the tracks that we're going to be talking about today, the A-sides and the B-sides. But we're also going to have a mention two other tracks because we've been listening to the compilation album, which is called The Complete Recordings from 1967 to 68, which features more songs than just those four, including Magic in the Air, which was a dropped B-side, and also a track called Strange House, which was never released, but does appear on Bob Pollard's The Iodine Book Report, which is a four-CD compilation of 60s psych that he made available on the internet, but not in actual physicality. So, yeah, so we're going to talk about their four singles. And of course, they famously released a version of Hi Ho Silver Lining before the famous one. Some of the songs that they released as singles, there were other covers as well.
Right, so should we go through it in order then? So it was Try It, the first song.
Try It came out in 67. Yeah, that was their first one.
On the B-side.
That's right.
Well, I think it should have been the other way around myself. I prefer We Don't Know. It's a nice little song. It rattles along. Drums sound great. The drums sound good on a lot of this stuff. Chorizo Jr. pointed out that it sounds a little bit like the 1960s Batman theme at the start, because it goes... verses sing about we don't know about. It's basically a list of all the things they don't know about. They don't know about sex. They don't know about drugs. They don't know about the H-bomb. The opening line, we don't know about the H-bomb. We don't know about drugs. It's kind of like a sort of 60s hippie version of don't know much about history, don't know much trigonometry. It's just like professions.
I thought it was reminiscent of Taxman, actually, as well.
Musically, yes. Yeah, yeah. But, I really like that one, and I think it's much better than Try It, which is okay. And again, the band are good, the band sound good, they're packing a bit of a punch, and it's a bit of a mod sound, which I'm a fan of. But the song itself is all right, it's all right.
I prefer Try It, I have to say. A little bit birdsy in place, I like the fact that he doesn't say try, he says try.
Try it, yeah.
Yes. Which I enjoyed. Apparently that song was also recorded by The Standells and Ohio Express. Neither of which version I've heard. But I like that. I thought it was really good.
It's all right. Yeah. It's all right, but We Don't Know is in my opinion, better.
Do you make of the Hi Ho Silver Lining version then? Because it's much slower, isn't it?
It's a tiny bit slower, and where they've got the Jeff Beck version... Obviously, Jeff Beck being a guitarist means they've got the sort of staccato guitar chords on the verses that start it. and the guitar solo, which on their version is all done on the organ. To be honest, it's not a song I particularly love. Anyway, it's all right. It's one of those songs that where you know, just reminds me of like the end of the night at the youth club disco. They used to put that on, and it's all right. Yeah, this version's not as good as Jeff Beck's version.
No, it's certainly not as poppy, is it? And you can see why the Jeff Beck's version was a hit and this wasn't.
I read a story about it. There's two guys, Larry Weiss and Scott English, who wrote this song. Despite Scott English being called Scott English, they're both American. Larry Weiss, incidentally, also wrote Rhinestone Cowboy. So that is a classic song. But the legend behind that song goes that the two of them had written most of this song together, and they'd written the chorus with Hi Ho Silver Lining, but they hadn't written any lyrics for the verses yet. And producer Mickey Most, legendary figure from the 60s and 70s, the mastermind behind lots and lots of hits, he heard this early version and he really liked it, and he was convinced it could be a hit. And he asked them to finish the lyrics as quickly as possible. Scott English, he knew it was a good song, and he didn't particularly want to give it away to someone else to record. He wanted to record the song himself. So he decided to sort of deter Mickey Most.
And he Sabotage it,
yeah. And he wrote what he considered to be the most unusable, stupid lyrics you could think of, about pea soup and beach umbrellas and all that kind of stuff. And then, much to Scott English's annoyance, when Mickey Most came back to hear the finished lyrics, he really liked them, and he took the song away immediately. And within days, it had been recorded by both The Attack and Jeff Beck.
Right, it went to number one with Jeff Beck, presumably, did it? I don't know.
Another interesting fact about this song is that they play this song at the end of a QPR home match. When we win, and listener, please feel free to insert your own joke about how infrequently that happens here. We'll leave a little gap for you to do that. You make up your own joke to go there.
Well, I was going to tell you that The Attack release actually got to number 53 in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a complete flop.
I mean, I'm not sure if it was number one song, but it's definitely a song that has lasted, isn't it? I mean, it's a song everyone knows, even now.
It's a Christmassy type song, isn't it? A piss-up song.
Yeah, like I say, it's the end of the youth club disco. It's the kind of thing that you could think they could probably put that on at the end of a wedding, and people will jump around and sing along and give it some Hi Ho Silver Lining on the chorus, even though no one knows what's going on, really. And then was the A side, and then Is It Any More Than I Do?
Which I think is better. And it's got a really good lead guitar on it. Actually, talking about
it has,
guitar.
Yes, it has. I like it too. Yeah, I would say it's better. I like the chorus and that kind of you can't want that kind of love any more than I do. It's quite an aggressive guitar tune, isn't it?
Interestingly, when John Peel was at Radio London, he used a part of that as one of his regular jingles.
Yes, and I heard that John Mayall heard it on John Peel as kind of like his theme tune, and he was impressed by is it O-List, the guy O-List?
Yeah.
The guitar solo, and he offered this David O-List guy a position in his Blues Breakers supergroup as a replacement for the recently departed Peter Green, but O-List turned that job down. I like that one. Again, the drums are really good. And then the third single...
Well, before we get to the third single, actually, the band's changed. Because at that point, O-List and White have left. And so there's a new lineup for the next two singles, which includes Jeff Richardson on guitar and Chris Allen on drums. Okay. So, yeah, it's a different lineup, five-piece. Yeah, and created by Clive, which is very much your dedicated follower of fashion-type vibe, isn't it?
It is. And they're speaking in that sort of posh, pseudo upper class voice. It's a song that's kind of poking fun at the fashion industry. Mm. And as we've discussed before with on this podcast, with judging by the number of other English bands who felt the need to make a song in the style of dedicated follower of fashion or Sunny Afternoon, and normally, like this one, resulting in some pretty embarrassingly forgettable records, I think.
Well, yes.
Ray Davies, he's got a lot to answer for, really, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he has. Apparently, the Attack were very upset about this single release as well, because having been totally undermined by Jeff Beck with their Hi Ho Silver Lining attempt at the charts, still on Decca, the subsidiary Derham, which David Bowie recorded for, didn't he?
Yeah.
On the same day that the Attack single came out, also released the same song by the band The Sin, which charted. The Attack version didn't.
So the actual same song created by Clive?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Much as you might think it's not much of a song, it was released twice.
Yeah, well, it still doesn't make it a good song.
And did you know Clive was a real fashion designer?
I did not know that, no.
And his renowned for having designed, is that the right word? I don't know, created, I suppose, the see-through miniskirt.
Well, that's not going to catch on, surely. There's a basic design flaw there, because everyone can see your pants.
Wow.
No one's going to go through that.
If you've got nice pants, you might want to show them off.
He sounds like a bit of a pervert. He's obviously a guy in the 60s who saw the invention of the miniskirt, where all of a sudden women were exposing a lot more of their lower half of their body, and he thought, you know, I like that miniskirt, but it doesn't quite go far enough. What I'd like to do is to make a see-through one. Yeah.
But I don't actually know if that's true, but that is what it does say on the sleeve notes of the album.
You don't know if it's true, but you're enjoying the mental image.
Yeah, I am, very much so, yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. So, you know, but neither of us like that. What about Colour of My Mind, which is the B-side? I thought that was a bit better. Had sort of a sitar-esque guitar on it and a bit of pumping on. I thought that was quite reminiscent of 13th Floor Elevators, in fact.
After the first couple of singles, I'm sensing a bit of a drop-off. Yeah, and then the Neville Thumbcatch, which is actually weird.
Well, that is rubbish, isn't it?
Weirdly, it's a song I already know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because of Peter Wingard, you know, that mustachioed guy, the star of Jason King those weird 60s programs. He does this song in his sort of rather curious spoken word style on his album Peter Wingard. And we've actually played a song from the Peter Wingard album on our podcast before, in which he, on our swearing special podcast, we played a song in which he manages to be offensive in a multitude of ways, as he demonstrates his full range of as an actor by impersonating what the act of rape sounds like in different countries around the world in a song called Rape.
Did we play that?
We did play it, yes. It was the closing song of our swearing special podcast, where we pointed out that it was far more offensive and upsetting than any of the very sweary songs we'd played in the rest of the podcast.
Well, I won't go back and listen to that.
No, it's horrible.
But I thought it was all right. I thought it was okay. It's a B-side. It's fine. But
it's all right. It's all right. It's produced, I noticed, by a guy called Vic Smith, who, if, like me, you spent a substantial part of your youth listening to and studying the credits on Records by The Jam, then you'll know him better as Vic Coppersmith Heaven. This is one of the first records that he produced.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's the sort of song that Ringo would have done if he'd been a Beatles song, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're probably on the White Album, and one of the ones you might fancy skipping on the White Album.
But it is the silly voice that kills it.
Well, actually, I think Peter Wingard does it better, because he just recites it straight in his rather upper-class dramatic voice. And it kind of works better in that arrangement but again, I think that's a pretty sad indictment of a record if you can turn around and say the Peter Wingard version is better.
Well, I suppose the record label thought it was going to be a hit, because they put that song in as the A side and replaced Magic in the Air. So Magic in the Air was cited as being the original A side that was going to come out. And actually, I think Magic in the Air is as good as any of their songs. I really like that.
Well, it's certainly better than Neville Thumbcatch. Yeah,
it's all, yeah. It's a, I think it's a bit
songs.
Of a,
one of the better,
bit songs. Of a banger, really, and it's got a false ending, which is always good. Mm-hmm. I'm keen on those. Bit Who-esque, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely better than a few of these other songs. Any of the ones where they've gone a bit away from that sound that they had at the start. I think the sound that they had at the start was good, but they've kind of tried to go with the changes and fashion and stuff, and it's, for me, it's not really working.
We should give advice to bands out there. Yeah, don't do the whimsy, right? Don't, whimsy never going to be good.
Well, it hasn't dated very well, has it? You know,
no, it hasn't.
So what was the next?
And what about the B? The B side was Lady Orange Peel.
Oh yeah, that's better. Again, yet again, the B side is better than the A side. I thought that Magic in the Air was the B side of that one, but if Lady Orange Peel is so. I quite like that. It's got some really good drum fills on it. It's got
a nice, noisy
guitar solo. It's quite psychedelic, but it also kind of grooves. It grooves along a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a good one. I like the line, come into my garden and I'll open a pear for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And open a pair of what? That's what you want to know, isn't it?
A pair of pants underneath your see-through miniskirt. I think that it reminds me a little bit of Sunshine Superman. Which is no bad thing. Yeah, it's kind of got that feel to it.
Yeah, no, that's right. And then the last song we were going to look at, which I put on our list, was Strange House. So this is from the band's last recording session, a little bit like Love. I think it sounds a little bit like Love in terms of the rhythm. It's got a good riff, and obviously Robert Pollard likes it because he included it on his compilation as the Attack song on the compilation.
Well, Robert Pollard, clearly a man of taste, because I think it's the best song here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the best song of the lot. So this was unreleased, was it, at the time?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a trippy song, isn't it? It's like a bit like sort of Get Off My Cloud, I think. You know, it says at one point, perhaps it was a funny dream, but to me it seems so real. And it's just a list of weird things. I was riding in the sky, I saw a strange-looking land, I swaggered over there to a house and a funny man. He invited me inside, and I saw such things I'd never seen before. There was a table upside down with no legs, and a funny coloured pink. There wasn't any chairs, so I sat on the end of a sink. I had tea in a clock, and I ate a piece of green rock. It was strange in his house. It's good. Yeah, I mean, like it. Yeah.
I'm going to pick up on one thing there.
Yes. Right?
If you've got a table with no legs...
Yes.
It's a tray, isn't it? It's a tray.
Well, I mean, maybe it's floating. There's a table upside down with no legs.
Yeah, so it's a tray, isn't it?
Flat surface.
You're mistaking a tray for a table there.
No, I imagined that the table is upside down, as in a normal table upside down, but it's floating in the air at tabletop height, but it has no legs.
So it's a tray?
No, not really. No, I don't think it's a train. It all depends on the size of the table. Right,
fair enough. Well, it's a good song. Anyway, good song. It's a good song, definitely.
It is,
So I would say that there are three good songs here. I mean, really good. I really like Try It. I really like Magic in the Air. And I really like Strange House. And two of those weren't released.
Yes, indeed, yeah. I quite like Try It. I quite like Magic in the Air, but not that much. Strange House is my favourite here, and I also like We Don't Know.
Those three stand out for me, but the rest are sort of okay, or I don't like them, like Neville Thumbcatch and Created by Club. I don't like either of those, really.
Yeah.
So that brings it down. I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay, I'm going to go slightly lower with a 4.5. So I thought that the next album... So I thought there was a guy in The Attack called John Cam, or John Ducan. But you've not mentioned him yet, have you?
Well, John Ducan replaced David O'List.
Ah, OK. So maybe you did mention him, but I didn't hear you.
I didn't mention him, but he did come in later on. Yeah, I didn't mention him.
Okay.
But he was in the second couple of singles he was on.
Ah, OK. So shall I take up the story as we talk about the next album that we're going to discuss?
Yes. Well, I mean, there's a link between the two, right?
Yeah. Well, because after he'd been in The Attack, John Ducan, also known as John Can sometimes... He formed a short-lived band called the 5-Day Week Straw People, who existed for a little bit longer than a 5-Day Week, but not much longer. And they recorded their only album in late 1967, before then changing their name to Andromeda. So both these bands featured John Duncan and Mick Hawksworth, who was on bass, and Jack Collins on drums. But then Jack Collins left fairly near the start of Andromeda's existence, and he was replaced on drums by a guy called Ian McLean. And then Andromeda then made one album on the RCA label called Andromeda. John Peel was a big fan. They did a session for him on the 17th of November 1968, and there was at the time some talk of him releasing some of their music on his label, which was called Dandelion. The album that we're talking about today is called Seven Lonely Street, and it's a compilation that was released in 1990. And as far as I can tell, none of the songs which were on that first eponymous album are on this compilation.
I think that's right, yeah.
And I don't think any of these songs that we're discussing were released at the time. They only were released for the first time in 1990, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, I think that's right. And a little bit of information that I've got with the album is these were all recorded in 1969.
Oh, that's quite a bit later then. Yeah.
The other link is that Richard Sherman, who was the singer, main singer in The Attack, was invited initially to be the singer with Andromeda, but he turned them down.
That first album, that eponymous album, original copies of that have been known to sell for well over £1,000. But if you're not married to the Prime Minister, you don't have that kind of money just lying around, then that first album, and these songs from the Seven Lonely Street compilation and the songs from that John Peel session and all the songs on that first album are all available for your enjoyment on the streaming service of your choice on a sort of definitive album called Definitive Collection of Andromeda.
That is definitive.
Yes. I already knew one of their songs called Day of the Change, which isn't one of the songs we're going to be discussing today, because that was on a Mojo, one of the free CDs that comes with Mojo, a compilation of sort of psych stuff called Kiss the Sky, a 67-minute mind-bending experience that came with a Mojo CD in 2017, which has got some good stuff on it, but I wouldn't say that the Andromeda song was particularly one of my favourites. Later, this John Duncan guy joined Atomic Rooster with some former members of the Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Those members presumably left that band when things got a little bit too crazy. Can I just tell a quick anecdote about Arthur Brown? So about 25 years ago, I went up to Hull to play a gig with a band I was in at the time at the legendary Adelphi venue, and we were staying in a B&B nearby. The lady running the B&B told us that Arthur Brown had been there the night before, and what a nice man he was, apparently.
He didn't singe the ceiling or anything like that?
Nope, not setting off the smoke alarms with his flaming hat or anything like that. Cooking his own bacon, maybe, being helpful in the kitchen.
That is a euphemism, isn't it?
I've got a quick question for you as well. So Mick Hawksworth, who was the bass player on this, he later joined a band who also feature on Pollard's list, and the one we're going to be discussing on a future podcast. Do you happen to know which band that is?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I shall tell you. It's a band called 10 Years After. We're going to be discussing their album podcast number 50. Although it should be pointed out that Mick Hawksworth doesn't play on that particular album, and fittingly, he joined 10 Years After about 10 years after.
Well, I'm good, and I should say before we go into the songs that I've got the album, which hasn't got much information on it at all, but it does say on the back, can you see the track listing for side two there? Any notice anything about those tracks on side two?
Well, they're not the same tracks, are they?
No, they're not on the album. So this version of the version is totally mislabeled, and side two are tracks by a band called Fuzzy Duck, and I only bring that up because guess who was in Fuzzy Duck?
Not Van Dyke Parks, not him again.
No. Mick Hawksworth.
Ah, he's popping up everywhere, isn't he?
Everywhere, yeah.
So he's in a boat. Mick Hawksworth.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. So I've no idea what those songs look like, that sound like, but I'd imagine they'll sound something like Andromeda and or 10 Years After and or Atomic Rooster, whoever he was.
Yeah, well, I listened to Atomic Rooster because the song Seven Lonely Street that this compilation is named after, they recorded it again on an album called Death Walks Behind You. So I listened to the whole of Death Walks Behind You, despite having preconceptions about Atomic Rooster that they're prog rock and I probably wouldn't like them. Prog rock and bluesy, so I probably wouldn't like them. It was all right, actually. There's some, the production was pretty good, and the organ guy, who was called Vincent Crane, who was a former Crazy World of Arthur Brown man, he's doing some nice stuff on the organ, so I did actually quite like that. Which brings me on to one of the main issues I have with this record, which is the production is not very good. You can't really hear it very well. And I don't know if that's related to the fact that these songs were unreleased at the time. You can barely hear the bass.
I think they all sound very similar, don't they?
You can't really hear any separation between the instruments, and you can barely hear the bass at all. Everything's in the mid-range. And then I might have enjoyed it a lot more had I been able to hear the songs a bit clearer. Having said that, there is some stuff on it I do like. I liked Go Your Way, which is a good little pop psychedelia tune.
Yeah, with a bit of sort of military drumming interludes.
Yeah, and that guitar solo is quite odd and doesn't really fit with the rest of the song. It sounds a bit like a sort of Irish folk melody or something, but I really like it, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one of the ones I like more than the others, yeah.
I did quite like Seven Lonely Street, which is a bit garage rocking. And the instrumental section in the middle of that was good, and I like the riffs and the twiddly-diddly guitars.
It's almost heavy metal, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. But what was the band we listened to, the Californian band that I didn't like? We were talking about how they had two lead guitars and they sounded like the two lead guitars weren't listening to each other. At least when they've got the two lead guitars going, they are actually in simpatico, or whatever the phrase is. You know, they're blending quite well.
Well, interesting about the other thing about Seven Lonely Street. And I agree. I thought it's a good slab. if I can use that term, of noisy psychedelia. But Seven Lonely Street, you'd have thought would be an address, right?
Yeah.
But it isn't.
What is it?
Well, it talks about seven lonely streets in the song.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you'd think that maybe it was Seven Lonely Street is maybe next door to the Heartbreak Hotel, because that's down at the end of Lonely Street, isn't it?
So you're suggesting that Lonely Street is not very long?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't want to walk a long street. I don't know where I'm going with that.
But no, I agree. So far, you've highlighted two of the three songs that I thought were all right. There's one other one which I thought was all right.
Is it the first song?
It is the first song, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one too. The Let's All Watch the Sky Fall Down, which it's got it's got the best chorus on the album, isn't it? And it's a bit... it's a little bit of the Who Sell Out. It's a little bit the Zombies, and it's a little bit...
okay. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, and I know you're very familiar with the metal world, it reminded me of the very early Deep Purple, so I would imagine Deep Purple Mark One, the one where, before Ian Gillan joins the band, they had a singer called Rod Evans, and they recorded, I think, two, possibly three albums, one of which is, the first one is Shades of Deep Purple, or Shades of Purple, maybe. And there's another one called The Book of Something. I can't remember what it is. The Book of... but it sounds like this. And they did a really good cover version of the song Hush. I don't know who wrote Hush. I'm sure you know the song, though.
Yeah, I know the song,
But their version is really good. But it sounds a bit like this, so which I like. It's a good sound.
Yeah, the Darkness of a Room is all right. I quite like that. The verse starts with sounds a little bit like Love Forever Changes. That one's all right. And I quite like Sleep, the song Sleep, which is kind of got... Well, it, it the songs sort of alternate between a faster sort of riffing kind of section with big sort of riff chords that I really like, and then the other section, which is a slower, almost like a ballad section that I'm not so keen on. So, but I like the fast bits in that. The rest of the album is just blues rock, and I'm not into it at all.
No, the last song goes on for about 20 minutes, doesn't it?
Yeah, keep out because I'm dying as well. I mean, it's all very well played. The band are clearly good. Searching for You again. Nah, not it's not for me. And the last song, See You Into the Stars.
The only thing about Searching for You, which was a bit more interesting, because it is basically a blues workout, isn't it? But I thought the vocals sounded different on that, and it reminded me of Python Lee Jackson. Do you remember them?
Well, I only know that that one famous song. Is it the Rod Stewart's on?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
but I thought it was a bit reminiscent of that, which I quite liked, and it has some nice echoey bits on it, which I quite liked. But the bluesy stuff is just a bit dull, isn't it?
I mean, it sounds like it'd be good live. It really does. It sounds like if you watch them live, it would be good.
Well, as you said, they're very proficient.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame about the production, because it would have been good to hear. The interaction between the band members.
Listened to the first album?
No, I don't think I have. No, I maybe listened to one or two songs.
Mm. Was that better produced? I was always going to ask.
I can't remember. Whatever I thought about it was not a lot, because I've literally not remembered anything about it.
So we didn't like this as much as The Attack. Well, I certainly didn't.
Well, go on then. Give us your points.
I've only given it a 3.
Right. Well, I've given it exactly the same mark as The Attack, because I didn't like The Attack quite as much as you did. So it's another 4.5. Because I do like Go Your Way, and I do like Let's All Watch the Sky Fall Down, and I do like Seven Lonely Street, and I quite like Darkness of Her Room, but it's the other 3 or 4 songs that the blues rocking ones.
I mean, I think if you like that blues rocking sound, you know, if you're a big fan of, let's say, Rory Gallagher, you'd probably like this.
Or Cream. I've never really listened to any Cream, but this is what I imagine they kind of sound like.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Never mind. It was interesting enough to listen to. We are actually moving on to the next tape, by the way. We're going to listen to a band which most of our listenership will know, I would think.
Yeah.
So on tape 31, we've got a couple of albums by The Doors.
And which albums are they?
Waiting for the Sun and The Soft Parade.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kicker of Elves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.